You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
And at my town's public library growing up, the Andover Public Library, you would walk down this flight of stairs into the basement. And basements, by the way, at that point in time, when I was 8 years old, they scared me. But anyway, I went down to the basement reluctantly, probably with my parents' guidance. I got down there, and they had records for sale. Old school black vinyl. And it was used, of course. And I think everything was $1 or, you know, if you bought more than one item, it was $1, something, some kind of configuration like that. So I had probably no more than $3 to my name, and I loved music. I still love music. I loved it as a child, love it now. And I'm perusing through what's in there, and Ann Murray was a name that I recognized. My mom and my dad would play Ann Murray, or I'd hear her on the radio with my parents. And I said, ooh, I want this. So they had two Ann Murray records for sale at the Andover Public Library. Her Greatest Hits was one of them, and the other was the album New Kind of Feeling. And the closing track on the album New Kind of Feeling is Yucatan Cafe, which is the song that I just opened with. And that was my favorite track of the album. So I spent two whole dollars on two albums that were used for sale at the Andover Public Library, which left me with one whole dollar. And I'm worth more than that now. Not much more than that now, but a little bit more than that. And why am I telling this story? Well, the librarian, then and now, I think at the time, I could be wrong, she might have to set me straight, was Amy Orlomoski. And Amy also is known for bluegrass music and playing it on the radio in Eastern Connecticut. But at that time, I knew her from the library, and today we're going to be focusing on bluegrass. But Amy, you probably didn't know that, but long ago, I bought my very first record ever at the Andover Public Library.
Well, that's pretty cool, I have to say. Great story.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on Spotlight Connecticut with me.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. You needed me, right?
Yes, yes. It is true. You know, I just want to point out, I'm so grateful for Amy being willing to come on the show, because I asked her, I think it was, what was it, Thursday night or Wednesday night, maybe?
I think so, yep.
Yeah, midweek, and that's not common. I usually book these shows out several weeks at a time, but the person who I was originally booking for today's show had a medical emergency and couldn't get on. And so when you're in talk radio and you're relying on guests, you start to sweat when you're like 2 or 3 days out and you don't have somebody. But Amy was someone that's always been on my radar because of her work as host of the Bluegrass Cafe, which is on WHUS-FM, the campus and community radio station at the University of Connecticut. Now, Amy, like I said, growing up, I knew you as the librarian, but there's this other side of you, a bluegrass lover, a radio host. How did that come to be?
Well, that's kind of a long story, but I went to UConn. I didn't go to UConn. I did not graduate from UConn, I have to say. I had gone to Eastern and got my undergrad there in communications, and I did I took a radio course, and I think we would get extra credit if we signed up to do a radio show at WECS at Eastern. So this was back about 1988. I think, roughly. I'm dating myself here. But I did a little program called Simply Bluegrass, and I kept it that for probably 6 or 7 years. I continued it long after I had graduated from Eastern. But I always was aware that there was a bluegrass show at UConn. In fact, the guy who was the teacher who was my teacher at UConn, or excuse me, at Eastern, was actually the general manager at UConn.
Was this John Murphy?
John Murphy, yep. So he was always mentioning WHUS, so he knew about the whole bluegrass situation here and there. But, you know, that was like the big leagues for me to aspire to maybe someday being on the air at WHUS. I never really thought about it. But one day I was actually at home, and a lady from Chaplin called me, who Myrna Rickey, she was producing the radio show at UConn at the time, the Bluegrass Cafe, and she said she had heard me at Eastern, and would I be interested in joining a rotation at UConn? And I had been away from radio for maybe a year or so at that time, so I jumped at the opportunity, and that's how I got to UConn.
That's kind of a cool story. I mean, you hear stories about people, you know, hopping from one radio station to the next in, like, New York, and here you're doing it in Eastern Connecticut. I just find that to be so cool. But, you know, bluegrass is a very interesting genre, and, you know, if you're going up and down the radio dial, you probably don't hear much bluegrass, at least in Connecticut. And so my question to you, is this a genre that you liked back when you were a little girl, you're growing up? Was this something that interested you long ago, and that's how you decided to do it at Eastern? Or what kind of led you to bluegrass?
Well, I was always sort of a dorky kid. I'm sure that comes as a major surprise to anybody that knows me. Not at all. But we always listened to country music around the house when I was growing up. I have two older brothers. One of them, I mean, they were both were kind of a tolerant of country music. One certainly liked it more than the other one. And my brother, who is closest in age to me, he's 10 years older than me, he actually had a couple of bluegrass records floating around the house that he really liked, and he played them all the time, and it kind of, you know, took over my listening a little bit. So I wouldn't say I exclusively listened to bluegrass music, but I was definitely exposed to it as a kid.
Do you remember what those records were?
I actually do. There was a band out of Rhode Island, but it had two members in this band. Actually, they were from Oneeko, Connecticut, if you're familiar with that part of the world.
Well, tell people where that is.
Yeah, that's part of Sterling, Connecticut, which is up in the kind of the northeast quiet corner of the state, not so much toward the corner, but a little bit further south than that, but definitely over close to Rhode Island. And there were two brothers that were from that area, Fred and Earl Pike, and they had a band with some family members as well as two other members of their band, and they were from Canterbury, which was my hometown, which I thought, now that's the coolest thing, that these two guys from Canterbury, I can hear them on this record from Fred and Earl Pike and the Pike, the Pine Hill Ranchers.
Do you still have this record? You know, is it still in your collection?
Oh, yeah. Yep. And they made a couple of different records. In fact, the daughter of Earl Pike, her name was Earlene Pike, and she had a very distinctive, very strong sort of voice that really you wouldn't have believed she was just a teenager. She had a very big voice, kind of in the Brenda Lee sort of school, if that makes any sense. Leanne Rimes kind of had that big voice, too, when she started off as a younger singer. But Earlene Pike played a lot of shows all over the Northeast with her folks and her band. And, yeah, that's what I listened to. That's how I got exposed to it. Sadly, Earlene died in the early 70s. She had cancer, but she died before I'd actually started listening to these folks. But, yeah, that was my very first exposure, I think, to bluegrass music.
When you started the radio program and on there you're broadcasting bluegrass music, was this really just kind of a hobby thing for you, or did you have a mission? Like, did you say, I'm going to introduce Eastern Connecticut, Northeastern CT audiences to more bluegrass? Was that a mission for you?
I don't think so. I don't think I thought in as far as mission, you know, grand things like that at the time. How it worked out was that I actually listened to more country music at the time in the 80s than bluegrass. I did have a few favorite bluegrass bands. I knew enough to get me through, but I would not ever characterize myself as an expert in bluegrass music, you know, at that time, for sure. A friend of mine was doing, it was a three-hour block, so she did the first hour and a half of the program, and she did country music, And I didn't want to continue playing country music, so I said, well, I'll play bluegrass and see how it goes.
The question is, what is bluegrass? Okay, you think of maybe country music, you think of folk, all of that Americana genre, but bluegrass is distinct in and of itself. Amy, what is it?
Ooh, boy, that is a million-dollar question. If I had the perfect answer, I could make... I could be very well known, I think.
Probably.
But, I mean, to each person, I think, that listens to bluegrass music, I think they characterize it in a different way. I was just quickly taking a look at our friend on Google here to see what they thought a definition of bluegrass music would be. And I sort of agree with what's on here. It just basically says that it's acoustic string music, defined by a fast tempo, high energy sound, and distinct instrumental and vocal characteristics. Yeah, I can go along with most of that. It definitely includes, I mean, and to my mind, bluegrass has to include a banjo, and it generally has to include a mandolin, because the father of bluegrass music, Bill Monroe, played the mandolin. So I need those two instruments at the very least. And it's primarily, you know, guitar, upright bass, a fiddle, sometimes a dobro or resophonic guitar as well.
But what makes it different from country music? Because sometimes in country music, those elements are there as well.
Right. Not so much these days, I don't think. Or at least
the classic country, right.
I've listened to. Right.
Morgan Wallen doesn't have any of that stuff. He has no banjos.
Right, right. So I think the difference is just basically in the approach, maybe. I mean, I know that it's primarily acoustic instruments in bluegrass music. So the only amplification you're going to get is through a microphone, generally. But, you know, country music is its own thing these days. And I think they started off more closely related to each other, country music and bluegrass music. There was a time when all of that stuff was heard on the same radio dial, you know, WSM in Nashville.
Yes.
All of that stuff. But
founder of the Grand Ole Opry 100 years ago this November.
That's right. That's right. They just are having their great big birthday down there.
And, look, no one wants to give AM radio credit for anything these days, and I want to make sure people know that WSM AM is the reason why the rest of America and the world knows of these genres.
That's right. Clear channel, because everybody could hear WSM pretty much, even parts of Connecticut, I guess.
But have you ever been down to the Grand Ole Opry before?
I have been there several times. It's an experience. You really have to get down there. If you consider yourself even the smallest bit of a fan of country music, you need to go to the Opry.
I've been there once. I can't wait to go back again.
And the Ryman Auditorium, too, which was the many years home of the Opry.
Have you been to both the new one and the old one, or just the newer one?
Yep, both.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day, yeah?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 50% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your designer shoe warehouse store is on sale right now. Sneakers, boots, dress shoes. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 50% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron.
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Incredible.
So, yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about bluegrass here. So, was it, did it just branch off from country? Was it a rebellion of some kind, would you say?
I think that it's just, this is, you know, primarily this is what Bill Monroe played, and he was from Kentucky, and he called his band the Bluegrass Boys, so that's where the name bluegrass basically came from, is from, this is the kind of music that Bill Monroe plays. And then, you know, he had two very famous, well, he had a lot of famous alumni of his band, including Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs. You may have heard of Flatt and Scruggs through probably from the, you know, the average listener is probably going to, and I don't mean that in a demeaning kind of way, but the average person has probably heard of Flatt and Scruggs through the, you know, Beverly Hillbillies and the Ballad of Jed Clampett and all that kind of stuff, and through the Foggy Mountain Breakdown, which was used as the in the music bed of the Bonnie and Clyde movie there in the 60s. So, that, but yeah, so Flatt and Scruggs played bluegrass. They kind of took it in a little bit different direction from Bill Monroe, but it's still all considered bluegrass music. And the Stanley Brothers were kind of doing their thing in Virginia, and their music was pretty much featured in the film Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which was really... That was a very big soundtrack a few years ago. So,
is this genre uniquely American? Like, in other words, if you went to, I don't know, pick a country, England or Germany, are people making bluegrass music over there, or is this something that is truly unique to the United States of America?
Well, it's from America, but it's based on some, you know, African rhythms. Bill Monroe actually was inspired by, when he was growing up in Rosine, Kentucky, there was a musician there by the name of Arnold Schultz, and he was a black guitarist, I believe, and he really, Bill Monroe learned from his kind of rhythms, and he incorporated that into his bluegrass music as well. So, yeah, I mean, it originated in America, but there are bluegrass bands probably all over the world. I know there's a pretty big contingent of bluegrass fans in Japan, and also throughout the UK and in other parts of Europe. They have bluegrass festivals. It's kind of universal, yeah.
She's Amy Orlomoski, who is the host of the Bluegrass Cafe, a long-running radio show at the University of Connecticut's campus radio station, WHUS-FM. Now, Amy, next question here for you. What do you know about your audience, right? You've been doing this show for a few decades now. You're clearly passionate about bluegrass music that you play for your audience. Have you come to know anybody out there in the crowd and maybe somebody who said, hey, I never really gave this much thought until I heard you on the radio?
Probably not that latter so much, but I definitely run into people. I have regular listeners. I mean, anybody that does a radio program, as you know, has regular listeners. You know, you may not hear from them every week, but you kind of know they're out there. And so that's always a cool thing. But I, you know, I've occasionally run into people who've come in the library and they'll say, your voice is familiar. You know, and they can't quite place it. But then they'll realize that, oh, I might have listened to you on the radio the day before or whatever. So that's always interesting to me.
And what time are you on? How can somebody listen to you?
So the Bluegrass Cafe airs on Sunday afternoons at WHUS from 4 until 7 o'clock. We are generally, on occasion, preempted for sports. You know, they have a pretty good basketball team at UConn.
Yeah, I think I've heard of them before, maybe.
Yeah, so sometimes they air those games there.
I think they're called the Huskies.
Yeah, something like that. I didn't go to UConn, so I don't really know. But
gotcha.
Yeah. So yeah. But mostly we're there from 4 to 7 on Sunday afternoons.
So I had a friend about a decade ago gave me a pile of records. I mean, he unloaded everything that he did not want from his record collection onto me because he knew I liked music. And at that time, I hadn't really branched out beyond the best names of rock and roll and things like that. And I liked some swing and some older genres in general, but I hadn't really branched out. So when I saw in the record pile that there was Chicago, that there were the Beatles and all of these bands and names that I did recognize, I was excited and I kept those. And then I came across some one-offs. And I see this cover of Hazel Dickens and the album Hard-Hitting Songs for Hard-Hit People. And I said, what the hell is this? So that's exactly what I said. And I looked at the names of the songs and nothing clicked with me. Nothing was interesting to me. I didn't recognize anything. So I put it in my discard pile. I took it to a record store and I sold it. And the guy that was at the record store in Vernon, New England, I don't even remember the name of it, New England Jukebox and Records, something like that. And he said, well, Hazel Dickens, that's not a name you see often, but it doesn't mean people are buying her music either. But I'll give you $5 for this. So something tells me I got ripped off, and he probably ended up selling it for a lot more money. In any case, a number of years later, and I was starting at that point in time to branch out and listen to other music and other genres and explore, I thought of this album by Hazel Dickens. I said, you know, I never sampled it, and I'm curious. So I went online, and I fell in love with it, and I went out, and I bought it again. And no, it was not less than $5. So the moral of the story is don't judge a book, or in this case, a record by its cover, and don't discard your music until you have sampled it, because you'll probably get ripped off like I did. So these are some tough life lessons from yours truly, Morgan Cunningham. My guest is Amy Orlomoski. She is the host of the Bluegrass Cafe at WHUS in Storrs, Connecticut, also known as the University of Connecticut's campus radio station. Amy, do you like Hazel Dickens?
I appreciate her a whole lot more than I used to when I first heard her, because I think I was initially turned off by her emotional, the rawness in her voice.
But it's raw, yes.
As I have matured and hopefully become a whole lot smarter, I really appreciate all of her music right now. And she's actually a member of the Bluegrass Hall of Fame. I didn't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't. Wow.
She was inducted in 2017. She died back in 2011, so unfortunately she was posthumously elected to the Hall of Fame, but she is there, and that's where she absolutely deserves to be. And Scraps from Your Table is what you played. That is an excellent, excellent tune.
I love that song. Old Calloused Hands, that's another great one from that record. People should check that out. But she is raw and emotional, and when I think of bluegrass, that's definitely a common characteristic. I mean, she's really raw. And tough. But I think that ruggedness is definitely there in a lot of bluegrass. That's a common characteristic, isn't it?
And that wasn't an act with her either. That was her actual life. So she, a lot of her songs, I think, were pretty much little chapters out of her life. She wrote a lot of her own music as well. So that's, I think that's another important thing in bluegrass. I think everybody thinks of it as songs about, you know, cabins and mountains and all those sorts of things, and those themes do run pretty straight through as well, but a lot of those emotional stories of real life are what you can hear in bluegrass music, and I always find that interesting.
I also love the title of that record, Hard-Hitting Songs for Hard-Hit People. Makes you think.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 50% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your designer shoe warehouse store is on sale right now. Sneakers, boots, dress shoes. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 50% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Yeah, definitely she didn't have an easy life, for that's for sure.
No. Well, let me ask you this. Who were the heroes? I mean, we've already talked about some of the big names. But who were some of the heroes of bluegrass of yesteryear? And then I want to talk after this specifically about bluegrass today. But if we were to go back 40, 50, 60, 70 years, who are some of the heroes that you would point out in the bluegrass genre?
People that should be explored for someone who might be interested in listening to bluegrass. I would probably start with Bill Monroe and his Bluegrass Boys. Then definitely go into some Lester Flatten, Earl Scruggs, and the Stanley Brothers, Jim and Jesse, Reno and Smiley, for sure. A lot of teams working in those early days, and Lonesome Pine Fiddlers were good. Moving up into the 60s, a band called the Country Gentlemen, they were from the Washington, D.C. area, and they definitely, they were one of my brother's favorite bands, by the way, so I was definitely exposed to the music of the Country Gentlemen, but they were bluegrass for sort of a more metropolitan, I'm using my little air quotes with that, kind of audience, because their home base was really Washington, D.C., and they became pretty popular. And into the 70s, a lot of great bands. I mean, I obviously can't name all the bands in bluegrass without showing some of my own prejudice, I guess, but my personal favorite band from the 80s and what really got me into wanting to listen to more bluegrass music was a band called the Johnson Mountain Boys, and they were also from the Gaithersburg, Maryland kind of area, and they used to come up here frequently to Connecticut in the 80s and play shows for the Connecticut Friends of Bluegrass, which was an organization that was pretty strong in the 80s for sure. They did shows at the Chestnut Lodge in Colchester. And it was always the coldest day in February when the Johnson Mountain Boys would come up. It was always right around President's Day weekend. And they were just, they were young. They were played everything really fast. They attacked the microphone. They just had such a energy, and it was infectious. And obviously did a lot to brainwash me into the whole bluegrass thing.
What about bluegrass today? Is it still a genre that has people really jazzed up? Are there still people who are playing it, new people who are playing it, new people who are having bluegrass hits? Is it is it something that's still very active to this day?
Definitely. There's an organization called the International Bluegrass Music Association, or IBMA. They just had their big convention. They moved this year to Chattanooga, Tennessee. But they had a great swath of bluegrass. And it's everything from, you know, within bluegrass music. That's the big category. But there's all sorts of different types of bluegrass within that. There's the more traditional kind of bluegrass, like the music that might have been played by a Bill Monroe or Flatten Scruggs. And then there's folks like Billy Strings that you may have heard of, who's out there these days, and he's an incredible guitar player and a great singer as well, and he's filling these big auditoriums and taking his bluegrass, which he appreciates the old stuff, but he's also doing his own thing. So he's playing bluegrass, his version of bluegrass, with those core instruments that we talked about earlier. But he's really finding a big audience and a lot of young people, which is great.
as the host of the Bluegrass Cafe on radio, and just anybody in radio in general would know that a big part of it is events, right? You know, if you're a popular host, if you're a popular DJ or talk show host, whatever it is, you know, in many cases, you'll partner up with somebody and you'll go to an event and you'll get people to go. Have you ever had one of your own bluegrass events or partnered up with someone who was coming to do a show in Eastern Connecticut and, you know, maybe you met up with some listeners there? Anything like that ever happen in all your years running the Bluegrass Cafe show?
So we have had a few in-studio guests for bluegrass that have played bluegrass in my time at UConn. We've had a band actually from Canada that was pretty popular for a bit called the Spinney Brothers, came down and did some live music for us. David Peterson, who is a Nashville-based performer now, he has a pretty traditional style of bluegrass as well. He came in the studio and did some things. We've had some local bands come in as well. I've done a lot of interviews of bluegrass performers at WHUS, but I've also produced a bunch of bluegrass shows for my Canterbury, it's not my Canterbury Historical Society, but, you know,
but you're
my
part
Historical
of it.
Society in Canterbury. Yeah, we've had about 10 bluegrass shows that we've produced over the years, so...
So you've kind of become, and I know you disagreed with me in the email, but you've kind of become the Northeastern Connecticut Bluegrass Authority in my view and in my analysis here.
I would not say I was the authority. I would say I know probably more than I ought to know, but yeah, I mean, I try to get out there and support the bluegrass in this part of the world for sure.
There used to be a band that would actually go to Andover. Again, you're the librarian in Andover, the Grassroots, I believe they were called.
Oh, yeah, Grassroots, yep.
Yeah, did you ever do anything with them?
Yeah, actually, we've had Grassroots play at Andover a few times. My brother Dave actually was part of Grassroots for a little bit of time.
Oh, really?
So, yep.
Small world.
Small world, yep.
And my guest on Spotlight Connecticut this hour is and has been Amy Orlomoski. She is the host of the Bluegrass Cafe, which is a long-running radio show at WHUS, the University of Connecticut campus radio station. And she was part of WECS-FM before that, which, by the way, shout out to WECS-FM, because if they had not found me, and had they not given me a chance, maybe you wouldn't be hearing me now on WTIC. So shout out to them. Although maybe you don't want to be hearing me on WTIC. And in that case, they are to blame. But we're down to our final moments with Amy. And I wanted to ask you, for people who are interested, there has to be some kind of association for bluegrass in Connecticut or in the region, some bigger entity and group that people can take part in or check out to learn more about the genre.
Actually, there are a couple of organizations that they might want to look into. There is one called the Connecticut Bluegrass Association. It's run by a very fine fiddler by the name of Austin Shelzo. He's with a group called Rock Hearts, also in a group of his own called On the Trail. They have a website at ctbluegrass.com. I know they've been hosting some weekly jams and monthly jams and things like that. He's just trying to kind of be... you know, one who gets you out there, and if you want to play, you know, please do. Get yourself exposed to bluegrass music. There's also a Rhode Island Bluegrass Alliance that has been active for the last several years, and ribluegrass.org, but I know it's ribluegrass.something, so check that out as well. There's also, in Connecticut, we have a big bluegrass festival every August in Goshen, Connecticut, called the Podunk Bluegrass Festival.
Well, that sounds fun.
Yep, so the dates, the 29th edition of Podunk will be held August 6th through 9th in 2026, and at the Goshen Fairgrounds in Goshen. So certainly visit that. If you've never been to a bluegrass festival, you owe it to yourself to get out there and take it in for at least a day or more.
By the way, I want to point out, I just looked it up. It is the ribluegrass.org. So it is a .org.
Thank you.
Now, there's something here that's making me mad, and we're going to close with this, Amy. You told me during one of the breaks that you're recognized for your efforts in Rhode Island, but not here in Connecticut. Now, how can that be, Amy?
Well, I just don't know. I guess the radio signal goes over the line a little bit, so that's a good thing.
Well, I guess that is a good thing, but we've got to do something about that here. What is it, the Bluegrass Hall of Fame in Rhode Island, is it?
The Reba, the folks for Reba, not Reba McEntire, to Reba, the Rhode Island Bluegrass Alliance, they have a Hall of Fame, and a couple years ago they let me join them, so that was very nice of them. I appreciate the honor, and it's a very, very cool thing.
Is there not something similar to that in Connecticut, or is there?
No, not as far as I know. The Connecticut Bluegrass Association has kind of come and gone a couple different times over the years, so I don't think anything has been established for that sort of recognition.
Well, I guess it's time for us at WTIC, our audience, to lobby for that.
Okay, sure.
We ought to do that. We ought to do. I mean, we've got plenty of people in our audience who lobby for other things. They might as well do something maybe a little on the fun side. Lobbying's
sure.
Not that fun. I've talked to lobbyists. It's fascinating, but it's not that fun, so we might as well have a little fun with it for once.
Yep. Well, bluegrass is definitely fun, and we hope to get a whole lot more folks listening, and if they want to join me at UConn, that would be great.
Well, tell everybody again how they can find you, Amy. I really appreciate your coming on the show, so tell people how they can find you.
All right. Well, we're on Sunday afternoons from 4 until 7, 91.7 on the FM dial in Eastern Connecticut, if you like to listen the old traditional way, style of the radio. Or you can also find us broadcasting online at whus.org. The archive, there is an archive of shows, but it only goes back about 2 weeks. So you could listen to, if you missed the show on, Sunday and remember to listen to it on Tuesday, you can do that if you really want to.
Did you save all of your old shows? Like, are you an archivist? Do you have everything going back to the 90s and all of that?
So when I was on at Eastern, and the signal was not very big, as you probably remember, my mother used to record all my shows on Wednesday nights, and I would listen to them during the week and hear what stupid thing I would say and how I mispronounced somebody's name and, all through the scratchy recording. And I probably have more of those than anything I've done at WHUS. I don't really save that many shows anymore.
Well, that is vintage. Look, Amy, I really appreciated talking with you, and best of luck. And thank you again for coming on at last minute on Spotlight Connecticut. Amy Orlomoski from the Bluegrass Cafe, thank you so much.
Thank you, Morgan.
Spotlight Connecticut with Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.